author, columnist, managing editor of LibertyNation.com, podcast host and conservative policy advocate.
We dismiss history at our peril.
Liberty Nation with Mark Angelides.
There is a new unit of time that will replace the nanosecond, and that is the amount of time it takes for an event to happen and John Kirby to get on the airwaves explaining what Biden really said and meant.
Liberty Nation with Mark Angelides.
My slippers, I got to explain this to you. They are exclusive. Three-tier cushioning system. It's like walking on clouds, right? We took the MyPillow patented foam, the one that you know and love, and they created a solid layer to provide incredible comfort. Don't forget to use the promo code Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R, and you will receive 40% off of your My Slippers. Your whole family is going to love it. I'll be heading back to the border next week. Yes. Back to the beautiful border, great state of Texas. I know you've all been following this very closely because it concerns all of us, right? The U.S.-Mexico border, again, the southern border with Mexico, roughly about 2,000 miles. I can tell you this, there are spaces that are wide open where nobody would know. I can't believe that I'm saying this again. I mean, I have been covering this for so many years, and it seems to be the same stories again and again, but worse every year, worse every year. What we're seeing down at the border is not only a humanitarian crisis, but it actually is a national security crisis. And that's why I have Congressman Babin on the show with me today. You will not want to miss this. He is a Texas state congressman. He is amazing. He is the co-chair of the House Border Security Caucus. Dr. Babin was appointed actually the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. So I'm going to be bringing him back on about that because you all know how important I think space science is and all of the changes that are happening in our world. But this time, for this podcast, we are going to focus on one of the biggest issues, if not the biggest issue, is what is happening in America today with this policy from the Biden administration that is really tearing our nation apart and putting young people, some as young as 3 and 4 years old, migrants, undocumented, unaccompanied, in harm's way and in the way of the drug cartel, the most vicious human beings on the planet, I believe, right up there with Islamic State. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. I'm going to talk a little bit about that, talk to you about my experiences inside Mexico covering the drug cartels and, you know, was it worth it? It was worth it, but I'm going to tell you about some of the horrors that I've seen down there and some of the horrors that I've heard about down there. I think you will not want to miss this episode. Remember, make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Wherever. I don't care where you get them. You get them on Rumble. You get them on YouTube. But if you get them on Spotify, Apple, you know, the iTunes, wherever you get your podcast, Spreaker, just subscribe to the podcast. We are just seeing our numbers grow. It's so important. There aren't a lot of women out there in the podcast world. Well, there's more now, but we're trying to get out there. We're trying to reach as many people as possible. And I'm trying to bring this perspective from my life and my career to you. I want you to be a part of this journey with me. I believe that we're all in, I'm not talking about COVID, but I'm talking about we're all in this together, this planet, our country, and I want to get those stories to you. And I actually want to do the stories that mean the most to you. And also go to sarahacarter.com. That's sarahacarter.com. I would love for you to sign up for our email list. It is so important because you can be shadow banned. I can be shadow banned. We can end up losing communication and being in touch with each other. And having this email list really allows me to be able to keep up with you, to send you like the top stories that we're writing about at sarahacarter.com and everything else, right? It's that important. It's just that important. Also, I want to say thank you again to our sponsor, AMAC. AMAC, you are great. It is the Association of Mature American Citizens. It is the fastest growing conservative 50-plus organization in America. AMAC believes in the values that have made our country so awesome: faith, family, and freedom. AMAC offers an alternative to just about every benefit that AARP offers. I know probably a lot of you out there, if you're 50 and over, you get these AARP newsletters or things showing up in your mail and, you know, telling you how great they are. They're not. They're liberal, and they fight for liberal agendas. They're not going to fight for you. They're going to fight for a liberal agenda. So I stand with AMAC. I hope that you will too. I encourage you to join today at amac.us/Carter. That's amac.us/Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R. The benefits of membership are great, but the cause is even greater. Join today at amac.us/Carter. You know, I'm just devastated at what I've been seeing happening on our U.S.-Mexico border. It's almost, you know, you can't get it out of your head. I mean, I dream about these kids sometimes at night, because when you talk to them and you realize that they've survived like this horrific journey, you know, coming from Honduras all by themselves, you know, the people that they run into, the monsters, I call them the monsters, right? These coyotes, these men who traffic these children. And what about their parents? Who would allow their young child to be trafficked? I don't know. I've talked to parents before. I've spoken to parents, some who left their kids behind. I never forget one woman that I actually had found. This was years ago, 2014, when I was tracking undocumented children that had come into the United States during the Obama administration. And there was one young man who was about 16 and a half, 17 years old, if I'm remembering correctly. And he hadn't seen his mother since he was 6 years old. He had been left behind in Honduras with a family relative and eventually ended up being raised on the streets by MS-13 because the relative didn't want anything to do with him. So even if the mother was sending money, et cetera, this child was basically left to raise himself. So imagine already how sad that is. His mother was actually working in Virginia here, and I'm not going to use names. Right? I'm not going to use names because everyone has their own situation. And I really don't know what happened to them after I had dealt with the story. And it was just very sad and tragic. Well, when this child arrived to the border, he was a 16 and a half year old, and he was very big, actually. He was violent, extremely violent with the Border Patrol agents. They could not control him. He had psychotic tendencies. He had become indoctrinated into MS-13. That's Mara Salvatrucha, into the Mara Salvatrucha gang. And they didn't know what to do with him. So they had to move him, and they brought, and of course he came into the U.S. They couldn't deport him back. He was underage. And they moved him to a facility actually out here in Fairfax, Virginia. And I remember, you know, talking to some people that were in charge of him. I'm just going to leave it at that. And they were able to give me, actually, they had contacted his mother and gave her my number because she was too afraid to talk to immigration services. I think she was still here illegally. And I got on the phone with her. And I remember chatting with her, and I was asking her straight up, like, when was the last time you saw your child? She said he was 6 years old. She had been divorced. She had come here looking for work. She ended up getting remarried. She ended up having other children. She was never able to get her child back because she was illegal, she said. And just things were just tough on her. And I said, you know, your child's being held in a facility here in Fairfax, Virginia. And she was very distraught and upset about it. And in fact, she was crying on the phone about how terrible she had been and, you know, that she didn't have any other choice. And, you know, and I said, well, your child is violent and apparently joined a gang. And she was like, well, what can I do about that now? And I said, well, are you going to get your child? And she was like, she didn't know. So I want you to think about that. When you think about splitting up families, I want you to think about the fact that sometimes families have made the choice to split up. That's the tough part. That's the reality that we don't want to talk about sometimes, right? Those are the stories that are really hard to tell. It's really easy to tell a story where you have a victim and a bad guy, right? But when the story is murky and it's all muddy and it's filled with all kinds of extenuating circumstances, it becomes really difficult for us to tell that story. Who's the bad guy? Who's the good guy? What's going on here? What about the rule of law? What about these children? What about the children that are abandoned? Who stands up for them? Who will fight for them? I don't know. I don't know who will fight for them. And that's the sad thing. I think the only way we can fight for them, right, is to tell the truth. Is to hold everyone accountable. It's to expose the truth. And the Biden administration isn't letting us do that, folks. They are not letting journalists do their jobs. Look, I don't care if you're from sarahcarter.com, great writer Jenny Tare, Annalise Levy, Douglas Braff. You guys got to read all their stories on there at sarahcarter.com. Or if you work for the New York Times, right? Or the Washington Post. The stories should be truthful and they should be whole, meaning you don't just tell one side of the story because it suits you. You tell the whole story. You tell the whole story because that's the only way we can resolve this crisis. That's the reason why we're seeing a lot of congressional members, you know, Congressman McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, head out to the border. That's why, you know, Congressman Babin, who's the co-chair of the House Border Caucus, you know, Security Caucus, going out to the border. He's from the great state of Texas. And, you know, and that's why we saw Andy Biggs. Everybody's trying to get out there to see the truth. And what's happening is Department of Homeland Security, you know, secretary is saying you're not allowed to come in. You know, they monitor me out on the border, not my phone, not all that stuff. Now, I'm not talking about that kind of monitoring, but that Border Patrol agents that know me say that DHS wants to know if I'm going out there to cover any stories. They don't want me out there. They don't want other reporters out there. Why? Because they don't want the truth going to the American people. It works against the administration's narrative that there isn't a crisis. Let me play this clip for you. I'm probably going to play it again and again and again throughout here because you got to hear these clips. First, I'm going to play Jen Psaki's, this is her Freudian slip that it was a crisis. This is Jen Psaki, the press secretary for the White House. Listen to this after calling it a challenge for so long.
There have been expectations set outside of unrelated to any vaccine doses or requests for them that they would be partners in dealing with the crisis on the border.
Crisis. Now, I want you to hear this. Here's where she backtracks and says, oh, well, wait a minute. It's a challenge.
Number seems like a crisis. The secretary said it isn't. How would we define a crisis?
Well, I'll leave that to the Secretary of Homeland Security to define. He said it was a challenge. It is a challenge. We have more than 7,000 unaccompanied kids who have come into the United States. And that is certainly a lot of children that we are trying to treat humanely and safely and process through the system as quickly as we can. That's not easy. That is a challenge.
That's just crazy. It's just crazy. They don't even know what to say because they're too busy trying to cover up their lies. You always know when someone's lying to you, when they're just convoluting the words and going back and forth. It's like when your kids tell you a fib, right? Where were you last night? Oh, and you know, nobody knows what to answer because they didn't come up with a story yet, right? This is the same thing. But you would think an administration would have like some kind of like definitive narrative. I guess they've tried to keep the challenge word. They think that they can gaslight us. They think that it's okay to gaslight the American people. I want you to think about that. That's how little they think about you. They don't think much about you. They don't think you're smart enough to actually see what they're doing. It's kind of like the whole COVID thing, right? I got so much to talk about that later on in the show. It's just crazy. This whole mask thing. And I'm so proud of Senator Rand Paul. What an awesome, awesome senator, right? We got to get him on the show because he was the only one that's like, wait a minute, there is something going on here that's not quite right. And he's a doctor. And he's like, I gotta talk to Fauci. This is craziness. This is crazy what you're doing to our country. It's the same thing, guys. It's the same thing when we're dealing with the border. Oh, by the way, shout out to some pilots. If you're listening, actually this pilot, I'm not even going to say for what airline or anything, because as I walked off the aircraft exhausted, because I've been flying everywhere, right? For Fox News, I've been doing it for Sean's show, like roving reporter all over the country. And I had the mask across my face. And I said, thank you so much for a flight. Great flight. This pilot was like, Sarah Carter, I'm an avid listener of your podcast. So thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Thank you so much for flying me safely around the country. I appreciate it every day. I appreciate the work that all of our men and women are doing, both all across the country, whether that you're at the airport, whether you're cleaning, whether you're, you know, wherever you're working, whether you're a doctor or a dentist in the medical field, whatever it is. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And now let's open up the country for everyone else. Let's end these crazy lockdowns. Why? Because once again, they want to gaslight you. The border is wide open, folks. I was there. There are people crossing this border who have COVID. We know that because they've been tested. Don't let anyone lie to you. They have been tested. And those are the only the people that are showing symptoms or people that actually went to the hospital because they actually have to test them there. So even if, let's say, you're 15 years old or 16 and you break your leg crossing the border or you have an owie, whatever, whatever you got, you have a flu symptom or anything, they're going to test you for COVID. They're going to do the rapid test for COVID. So in Brownsville, we saw the numbers come out a few weeks ago. It was about 108 that were tested, but only the people that are showing symptoms or people that have gone to a hospital. Otherwise, they're just putting everybody on a bus and saying, hey, thanks a lot. See you whenever. Whenever you get your asylum claim, come to court, report back to court, report back to court. Not going to report back. I guarantee you there's going to be a whole slew of people, the majority of which receive their papers, will not report to the U.S. court system to process their asylum claims. They will not because they're in here. They're in already. They don't want to take any chances that that judge is going to say, yeah, that asylum claim, that's bogus. I'm going to kick you back to your country. You know? So I want to talk about asylum claims. Let's talk about that for a minute because I was down at the border and this was when I was in Yuma, Arizona last week. And I met this really wonderful kid. He was 19 years old. He was from Honduras and he was like hanging out in betweens. He was in the betweens. That's what I call it. It's like the no man's land, right? The borderless, right? I call it the no man's land, the borderless land. It's kind of like there's no fence there. You don't know if you're in Mexico or the United States, but you're kind of hanging out. He was really technically in the US, right? But he was just hanging out like near the dam and he didn't want to cross over. And just before that, before I saw him, a family had come through. They were from Cuba. Another gentleman had come through. He was from India. And there were a bunch of families from Honduras that had come through. So then I see this kid just kind of hanging out, you know, doing his own thing with, he had a mask on, had his mask on. It was like the little paper mask, but, and he had a backpack and he was standing out there. And so I ran down the hill around the fence line, which I was still in America. And I was like, hey, wait a minute, because Border Patrol was trying to keep me from talking to the folks that were coming through. They were trying to intercept them. And it isn't because the Border Patrol agents were being jerks. It was because their supervisor told them they didn't want me interviewing people on the border. That's the only reason why. This time, however, I lucked out. There was no car to intercept at that time. And so I ran out and I met this young man. His name was Danny. He told me about his journey and that he had come from Honduras and he had traveled, you know, roughly a few months, to get, to the United States with his sister who has two young children. And, she was alone. Her husband was no longer in the picture or in her life. And that they rode La Bestia, they came on the train. And he and I, we actually had some time to talk. We actually became friends. We're actually still in communication. And he sent me some video of his journey and the dangerous journey that he took, which is, you know, on this train. And you could see just how exhausted he was. And I said, Danny, what are you doing hanging out in the in-betweens? Are you going to come in or are you going to go out? And he goes, well, you know, in Spanish, I want to come in, but I want to come in when like nobody can catch me. I'm like, why? It's like wide open right now. They'll process you right now. I mean, look, that's what I mean, he's heard that too. He did say that he came in and it might have been because he carries, and this is again, these are asylum claims, right? So he may have been carrying like a Mexican card, like a card that identified him, like an identification number from Mexico so that he could get services in Mexico. In that case, I don't think he would be like what they call Title 42. I've got to double check that. He could be sent back because he doesn't have, like, he has an actual identifier from another country. So he could be sent back. And he said he was sent back 7 days before, but he was really worried he'd be sent back again. But then he said, you know, I didn't tell them about my asylum claim. And I said, what's your asylum claim? And he said, well, that he was gay and that in Honduras, you know, if you're gay, it's could mean your life. You could end up being killed. And he said, so is that what you're going to do? And he said, no, I don't want to take any chances. I noticed he had hot pink shoelaces on. They were brand new. So I don't know if he was telling me the truth or if that was just something somebody told him that would allow him to stay in the United States. Either way, I'm not going to question it, right? But I know that that happens sometimes. What happens is the smugglers and the cartels will give people kind of a list of what the United States will allow for asylum claims. And they will tell them, this is what you need to say in order to stay. And so they will say that. There are people who have been abused, people who live under regimes that treat homosexuals with disdain, that are targeting the LGBTQ population, the community, those people who are transgender, on and on and on and on. There are countries that do that. We've seen that in Iran. We've seen that in other places. The problem that we have here is that now these asylum claims are being used as loopholes. So you could pretty much say whatever you want. And if you get rid of your identifiers, which I hear is what people are doing, that means any kind of ID, whether that's ID that you get from another country or ID from your own home, your own homeland, that makes it much more difficult for Border Patrol and Immigration and Customs Enforcement to process you, because now they got to figure out where you're from. And I want to talk to you about that too. That's the national security aspect. Poor Danny. I mean, this kid who's been parentless for a long time. He said his parents died when he was young, probably raised on the streets of Honduras, you know, really suffering. I understand the horrors that some people feel, you know, when they're traveling and willing to sacrifice so much to just find a better life, to just get the hell out of Dodge, right? We can't do it all though, because we have to have laws and regulations and a system that not only protects them, a child like Danny, but think about those other children that are young, that are under 18. And he's already considered a man, quote unquote, although he was a 19-year-old, you know. He's considered a man, but imagine all those kids that are traveling that are under the age and what happens to them. Remember the pictures I put on Sean Hannity's show? Those exclusive photographs of being in those tents, in those Biden tents with those kids? That's pretty tough. I mean, everybody's just kind of piled in there, wrapped up in tinfoil blankets, and it's just crazy. It's just crazy. And now we have over 7,000, and how many more? We expect 120,000. But think about the national security implications. Those are just the children. Then we have the family units. And then we have people coming from all over the world who we don't know, who aren't carrying identifiers, who aren't in an Interpol database. I mean, the four that Axios reported on, those four people that had their names on a terror watch list, those folks, on the other hand, were tracked because their names were on a terror watch list. But not every terrorist is on a terror watch list. I don't know how many times I have to say this to you, right? We just don't know who they are. Did we know who the people were on September 11th that flew into our World Trade Center or into the Pentagon or crashed the flight in Pennsylvania in the field? We didn't really know that beforehand. We now see evidence that we should have paid more attention to. I'm telling you, we need to pay attention to the border. The border is a very serious national security issue. It's humanitarian and it's a national security issue. And by the way, this is for the Department of Homeland Security. And this is for you, Secretary Mayorkas. I have every right as a journalist to cover the U.S.-Mexico border. And we have every right to tell the truth and to expose what is happening on that border. Every right. Every right to do that. You are not supposed to be closing off the truth from the people. And by the way, the children that are being held in the facilities, in those containers, have every right to have their story told. Don't tell me you're protecting those children. Don't tell me you are. If we were protecting those children, we wouldn't have a policy that exacerbated the situation so that these horrific drug cartels could do whatever they want. By the way, they are horrific. And I told you at the top of the show, and before I get to Congressman Babin, I'm going to tell you how horrific these they're terrorists. There's no other way to expose them. They're monsters. In some cases, they're monsters. I remember going in and out of the border, and you know, I'm thinking back to some of the sources that I had. My gosh, we put our lives on the line. You know, we put our lives on the line. There was a journalist that I worked with many times in Nuevo Laredo. And we would go from Laredo, Texas into Nuevo Laredo. I would go in there and I mean, I would just go in and he would take me with him. I don't even want to say his name. His El Mañana newspaper had been targeted over and over again by Los Zetas. At the time, people had been killed and gunned down in the streets. In Juarez, women were disappearing left and right. People were being killed. What about all the children that are missing? Do you ever wonder what happens to those children? Or when they find their bodies? Whatever, what they went through? What had been done to them? That's even if they're ever found. What about the people in January that were burned alive, those migrants that the cartels burned alive in that truck, right? Because the smuggler decided not to pay, decided not to pay the tax on them. What about the guy? Oh my gosh, this is the worst story ever. What about the guy in Matamoros? It was in 1989. I know it was a long time ago and a lot of things have happened since. But this was a drug dealer by the name of Adolfo de Jesus Constanzo. He was working in Matamoros. His organization was basically a hub there for his drug organization. And he was a practitioner, listen to this, of voodoo and some devil worshiping, like kind of a mixture of stuff. Apparently, he had a cult on his ranch there. And he would kidnap people from Matamoros. They would like literally kidnap people off the street and torture them and kill them to protect his drug trade. I mean, this is a lawless land, some of these areas. I mean, not even the police are going to protect you. They're on the payroll. I mean, I'm sorry to say it, but that's just the way life is in some of the drug towns and some of the border towns. He actually killed an American, a young American high school student, a guy who had just graduated from high school. And he tortured this kid. He tortured him. I think his last name was Kilroy. I mean, it was just unbelievable. It was Mark Kilroy. He was a pre-med student from outside. And they took him from outside of a Mexico bar. This was March 13th, 1989. They took him back to a ranch. He was a U.S. citizen. He had been in Mexico on spring break. He was brought to the ranch where Constanzo murdered him. I mean, and I don't even want to tell you how he was murdered. It's just that frightening. And the drug cartels, they take you and they destroy your body. They destroy evidence of it. They put you in vats with acid. They'll feed you to the pigs. I mean, you think I'm joking. I'm not. Just look at the stories. Here's a story. Mexico's world's deadliest country for journalists, right? This was just December 2020. Mexico is the deadliest country in the world for the media in 2020, accounting for almost a third of journalists killed this year, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists, which investigates attacks against the press globally. 9 journalists were killed in Mexico in 2020, bringing the death toll to at least 120 journalists since 2000. I would say that number is even higher. Last month, this would have been November of 2020, 3 journalists were shot dead within 10 days. This year's death count means that Mexican journalists are now more likely to be killed than those covering wars. And I got to tell you, as a journalist who covered the wars, I was more terrified at times of going into Mexico than I was into the war zone because I didn't know what would happen to me. I mean, there's a difference, right? If you get blown up, if you die in covering the war, or I guess getting kidnapped would probably be up there. ISIS would terrify me. Getting kidnapped by ISIS at the height of the Syrian war, something like that, that would be horrific. But, you know, there's a different set of rules, right? A different set of circumstances. In Mexico, it's no holds barred. I would go in and I would see and I would interview people and I would talk to them and they would tell me about, you know, this drug cartel. There was a 5-hour gun battle raging in the middle of the city and they used a bazooka and, you know, there was a grenade tossed in my backyard and, you know, and I would hear these stories and there was no cops. Nobody would show up. In fact, sometimes the cops were involved in it. So here we are trying to tell these stories. Here we are trying to understand the magnitude of this. So you're telling me that there's children that are just, oh, they're just walking to the border, you know, no problems. Everybody's just doing great. Hunky dory. Look at the families that they're just showing up on a nice train ride or a bus ride to the border and crossing without lining the pockets of the world's worst human beings. And now you have a national security a crisis, a national security crisis, because your neighbor to the south, at least President Obrador is listening most of the time. He's calling this Biden's, this is Biden's border crisis. That's what Obrador is saying. And Obrador is a socialist. He's like, what the heck is Biden doing? What is this administration doing? We can't even take care of these people. They're under threat every day. Right? And we're perpetuating this and lining the pockets of some of the worst criminal enterprises in human history. In human history. They behead people. They put them on posts in Rosarita. We've seen that. The Sinaloa drug cartel, Nuevo Generacion, Carlos Carrillos Fuentes. Look at some of these drug cartels. Look at what they've done. They can do it with impunity because guess what? Nobody's going to hold them accountable. And now, with all the money lining their pockets, who's going to hold them accountable? Imagine. What's a Border Patrol going to do? Oh, hey, I'm going to go out there with my one partner and try to stop this drug load when our president stopped the wall from being built while 600 people are crossing in a different sector? You want me to chase down these drug dealers? And then if I shoot at one of them, I could be charged? No, it's really tough. It's really tough. And this is the reason why we've got to tell the truth. We have to keep telling these stories. We have to get the American people, all of you, to understand that this is about you. This is about you and me and our children and the drugs coming into this country. This is about all of us, our nation, protecting our nation and protecting each other. And the only way we can do that is to hold our government accountable for the actions that they are taking and saying, guess what? No more. And if you're using my money, you better let me in and you better let me see what's going on. Now, without any further delay, I've got Congressman Brian Babb in here with us. He's the co-chair of the House Border Security Caucus. Like I said, he is a ranking member on the House subcommittee as well on space. And he's a national leader in the fight against what's happening on our border. He is somebody who I have known for some time, and he's a wonderful man. I don't know if y'all remember Jenna Lee, but that's his daughter-in-law, and she is awesome. She worked at Fox for a long time, and he's got like 17 grandchildren.
Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes, y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar20.
Voy a ponerme la vacuna Prevnar 20 porque estoy en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica,
la cual pudiera llevarme al hospital. Así que preguntaré sobre Prevnar 20.
65 años o más, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20. Vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente. Una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Congressman Babin, thank you so much for joining the Sarah Carter Show. I really appreciate it. I know that you have been focused on the border and you are planning on going again at the end of the month. Can you talk to me a little bit about the trip and what you are planning to gather there while you're there?
Absolutely, Sarah. Great to be with you as well.
But I, as the co-chairman of the House Border Security Caucus, we have a trip planned, actually we have two trips planned. One, very, very shortly, we'll be going down there with Texas members only. And then about 2 weeks later, we'll be going back with members of the Border Security Caucus from around the country, members from different states. And just to see firsthand what is going on, the terrible situation down there that the Biden administration seems to just deny is happening. They're denying reality, saying it's not a crisis, not an emergency. And yet they're calling in the Federal Emergency Management Agency. It's just a nutty situation, and it's very dangerous for America.
Oh, it absolutely is, Congressman. As you know, I've been down there. And by the way, I just want to say for all of you out there that are listening, Congressman Babin and his work on the border is extraordinary. I mean, he's a great congressman. He represents his constituents well, and he tells it like it is, isn't afraid to say the truth, to get it out there, and to challenge the executive branch, whether that was during the Trump administration or now during the Biden administration. Here's a congressman that really wants to know the truth, and that's why he's getting out there. I was there, you know, Congressman, for in Arizona as well as in Texas.
Yes.
And what I have seen, and you know, I've been covering this for roughly, I always tell everybody, roughly two decades, it feels like I've been out on the border, covering the border, and I can see the crisis, the exacerbation of this crisis by the Biden administration. It's so big that it reminds me, but I could see it being far worse, of the Obama administration during 2013, 2014, when we had over 67,000 unaccompanied minors entering the U.S. And now we're looking at close to 120,000 or more if these numbers keep up. That's got to be enormously frustrating for you, for the community, and for the country as well.
There's no question about it. And all enabled by the very foolish, decisions by this president, which started on day one of his tenure as our president. Joe Biden had a list of executive orders that basically just gutted all the hard-earned controls that the Trump administration and his very worthy administrators had made over the last 4 years. Because let's face it, we keep hearing this false charge that President Biden had inherited an immigration policy that was in shambles. Well, the reality is that President Trump inherited a immigration policy that was in shambles that was handed off to him by President Obama. And through the workings of his very able DHS secretaries, several of them, and others in the administration that dealt and really in an intelligent, very, very, I think, effective manner with Mexico, with the president of Mexico, Lopez Obrador, with the Northern Triangle countries, to come up with the migrant protection protocols, to the remain in Mexico policy, being able to even work deals with these Northern Triangle countries to control, so that we wouldn't have people just coming across in droves, thinking that if they just step one foot in, they would get asylum, and they would be given their date in court and released into the country, most of which never showed back up. And so President Biden, he did everything. He did away with everything.
Surprising, Congressman, because it's like now they're turning around and acting like they don't even understand how this happened, or they're trying to blame it on President Trump. And for the first time, I tell everyone this, I've covered the border since President Bush. And even then, there were never the policies and regulations put in place like we saw under the Trump administration. The Trump administration basically came out and said, look, if you want to come to America, you have to do it the right way. And we are not going to exacerbate this problem by allowing the drug cartels and the human traffickers to take advantage of the migrants, as well as our nation, take advantage of our nation, as well as these migrants who, by the way, are are being threatened by the cartels. Some of these young girls have been raped. You can find, you know, all kinds of contraceptive products that these young ladies have had to bring with them. And, you know, the Plan B, they actually found that along the border, because some of these children are being targeted. Women and children are being targeted by these sadistic men who are trafficking them into the United States.
So up to one-third. One-third of these migrants are being sexually abused or molested on the way up here. And I've been on that border many times as well, just like you have, Sarah, and I've seen these things called rape trees. We've seen the some of the remains of some of the terrible things that have happened on their way up here. And without question, the policies of this administration have enabled the cartels to do their nefarious activities to make at one point, I heard just the other day, they're probably going to wind up, the cartels will make $500 million per year. And endangerment of children and women and the poor migrants that are being sucked into it by the rhetoric of President Biden and other Democrats, and then to turn around and blame the Trump administration. It's just so disingenuous. And you know, I can say this too, the Trump administration, they did not have a lot of help from the U.S. Congress. They never did. They never did. And I'm very ashamed of that. I tried my best. I've, as the Border Security Caucus co-chairman, we worked with them and still working with some of the former Trump administrators right now. But this current administration has empowered the cartels and endangered the migrants. And they try to make it look like Trump was cruel, that his policies were inhumane, when in reality, the cruelty and inhumanity is what is happening down there now. I have a daughter-in-law who's a Brazilian, and she did it the right way, Sarah. She is now a U.S. citizen, very proud of her citizenship, and that's the way it should happen. We've got to be a nation of laws.
If you're not, then you have people living in the shadows. It does them no good to have to come into the U.S., even if there is a catch and release and they never show back up to court for their asylum claim. And now they're living in somewhere in the country, basically alone and without any recourse, right? They could be abused by the people that are hiring them for work. They live in the shadows. The system can't process and help them as much. And then the American people also pay the price economically. I was going to play this cut for you. This is Governor Abbott, and I want you to hear this. It's respond to it. It's a great cut right here.
Very concerned at the child sex trafficking team about the youth and the children who are coming across the border. They are in a perfect storm of vulnerability. We've heard stories that kids as young as 6 are crossing the border alone, and they are scared, they are confused, and they are very likely to end up in the hands of an exploiter from what we know about human trafficking and how it works.
Awful.
This is from that press conference, and this, I mean, when you hear her discuss this, and by the way, I want you to know, I'm sorry I didn't bring up her name, but it's the child sex trafficking team director, that's Andrea Sparks, with Governor Abbott, and they were talking about this on the border, and just the heartbreak, and I've talked to children, I've actually had to take a child one time, this was in 2014, and notify Border Patrol that she had been sexually assaulted, and, you know, when I talk to young people and I hear their stories and just how they survived the journey alone, and then they tell me, you know, some kids just never make it. You'll never know who they are because there's nobody investigating their disappearance. They may not even have a birth certificate. They may have been forgotten. Some of the kids belong to gangs, so their only family they've ever known is maybe MS-13. They're on these trains trying to make it to the U.S. Part of the problem, I believe, Congressman, is the fact that we are not openly talking about it. And the fact that the government hides a lot of this, and I'm talking about this administration in particular, you know, neither Homeland Secretary Mayorkas nor the Biden administration are speaking truthfully to the problem. And now they are silencing, and I know you've heard about this, our Border Patrol agents, and they're not even allowed to tell us what's going on out of fear that they're going to lose their jobs. Have you heard this as well?
Absolutely. And I've got, we've got evidence of it. You know, we've had questions in planning our trip to go down there in just several weeks. We have had and have talked to other members of other Texas congressmen who have had all of a sudden spontaneously out of nowhere HHS or FEMA are setting up, you know, a detention centers. Midland, Texas is one of them. And one of my colleagues who is the congressman for that particular district, August Pfluger, went to visit that, and they wouldn't let him in. They would not let him in. And
how is that possible? These are taxpayer dollars.
That's exactly right.
He is representing the constituents of his area, trying to see what's going on with the taxpayer dollars of American citizens and the treatment of these children. How is that even possible? You and I should go next week, and we should stand outside of those containers and say we're going to come in. I know Sean would be very happy if you did that. He has been trying to get a look inside one of those containers for a while now.
Well, he eventually got in. He sat out in his car, made phone call after phone call, and I think the string started being pulled. Some cages were rattled, and he was allowed to come in. But we do know that Border Patrol agents and sector chiefs who are on the front lines and seeing in firsthand in vivid technicolor what is happening down there are not allowed to give out numbers, it's statistics. They can't show photographs. They can't show videos without running it, not through their chiefs there, but having to run it through here in Washington before they can be given permission to give out information. This administration, Sarah, absolutely does not want the American people to know how dire this situation is. Wants to keep it quiet.
Wasn't this the administration that told everyone we're going to be so transparent? They tried and lied about the fact that the Trump administration was not transparent. You could have not found a more transparent administration if you tried. I never saw so many documents come out on an administration than the Trump administration. And the president was constantly talking to people on Twitter. And okay, granted, some people did not appreciate that as much as others, but he was avidly talking to the American people on Twitter. We knew how he felt pretty much every single day. Every single day, the president would send out a message. Now we're not hearing anything, and they're hiding this information from us. I was going to share with you. I got a message, actually, from one of my sources on the border. And when I'm out in Texas in different areas, I go to private property, which the government cannot throw me off of because it is privately owned land. But now they put a huge sign, basically, on your way to the privately owned land that the property before that is federal property, and authorized personnel trespassing by unauthorized personnel is prohibited. Like they are saying you cannot cross this property to get to the private property, or we will, I don't know what. I don't know if they're going to arrest me. We'll find out. I don't know if they're going to take me or tell someone to turn around and go back. But this is becoming a really serious issue when the government is basically saying to the media, once again, you're not allowed to question anything that we're doing. We're going to do whatever we want, and you just have to sit back and take it. And by the way, American taxpayers, you're flipping the bill for it.
This is what we're seeing over and over again, not just on border issues, but all issues. If you disagree with the hard left wing of this Democratic Party and their current policies, you're a bigot, you're a xenophobe, you're a racist, you're everything phobic, and it is simply unfair to be doing it. It's unconstitutional as well. And my question would be, how in the world would the private property owner, you know, how does he gain access to his own land if they're doing something like this? So I would just say, the heck with them. I would drive across there. I'd take my pictures and I would interview those individuals that are on the front lines and being confronted by thousands and of illegal immigrants that are coming in, and just get your story out, because all of the reversals of the policies of President Trump and his team being reversed have caused, without question, what is happening now. We've got well over a million illegals who have already had their day in court. Their cases are adjudicated. They have been given orders for removal, and they have stopped the deportations. Now, thankfully, Attorney General Paxton from the state of Texas has filed a lawsuit. That has been hindered. I don't know how many people are being deported, if any, with this litigation going on. But I can tell you, if you don't have interior enforcement and you start promising people that they're going to have amnesty and a path to citizenship, then you're going to just do nothing but incentivize more and more and more. It'll be a vicious cycle, and we are going to pay the piper right here in the United States.
Oh, we sure are, and so are the migrants. I mean, if you really care about people, if you really are a humanitarian, you do not want this to happen. And I'm going to follow it up with a question, because I thought you brought up such a great point about the fact that it's $500 billion made by these organizations, these drug cartels. Well, what do you think they purchase? And just for all the listeners out there, you know, this is a trickle down, but it's also a national security situation. When you think about the amount of weapons and communications equipment and vehicle equipment that these drug cartels can purchase, submarines, drones, a light aircraft, weapons, you can't even imagine. Our frontline law enforcement officers literally are up against an armada, an army of narcos, and they're just sitting there on the border babysitting and trying to get people processed, right? Or am I wrong?
Look at, you're exactly right. Look at the murder rate in Mexico and what it's done, and just track it over the years.
Right.
You know, 35,000 people murdered in Mexico, and the cartels are doing the huge lion's share of these murders, and they are fighting with one another because there's so much profit to be made because of the policies of the Biden administration. And we've seen some of the most ghastly atrocities down there, and it's going to spill over in the United States, and already is.
How many of our children have died? How many children do we have to lose? How many people with fentanyl, I mean, and carfentanil and Mexican blues, and, you know, not just marijuana. This isn't about marijuana. This isn't about smoking a joint, but how many joints out there, like in Baltimore, are laced with fentanyl? How many,
right,
you know, how many heroin addicts are shooting up because they've been given fentanyl? Right. And they had no idea. They might have smoked some marijuana. They might have smoked some pot, smoked a joint. It was laced with fentanyl. Now your kid is addicted. Now he has a heroin addiction. And so we're losing our, it's like we're being poisoned. It's
and
like our nation.
They are being poisoned, Sarah. There are 70,000 Americans are overdosing and dying per year in this country. And it will get nothing but worse with these types of border policies.
I want you to listen. This is Homeland Secretary Mayorkas, and I want you to hear him try to shoo away the idea that this is an actual crisis.
Mr. Secretary, do you believe that right now there's a crisis at the border?
I think that the answer is no. I think there is a challenge at the border that we are managing, and we have our resources dedicated to managing it.
I don't even know what to say. I mean, I just can't
critical,
even.
Cynical. Yeah, you can call it whatever you want to. Walls are immoral. They've stopped the wall construction, which absolutely was a horrible mistake. We know walls work. I've been out to San Diego. I've been to El Paso, where they're 95% effective after the construction of a wall in those two areas. 95% reduction in illegals. And to look at what's going on here in Washington, D.C., Mrs. Pelosi, with her steel 7-foot wall, coils of razor wire for miles and miles around a Capitol Hill, thousands of military troops armed and without any credible evidence of a threat here, over and over again. Let's take these assets and put them down on the border and
right,
resume construction of Trump's border wall.
Do you feel like common sense just went out the window? Like somebody just came in and just scooped our common sense right out of our country and threw it out, because that Nancy's wall is insanity. I go down there and we all call it Nancy's wall. That's because right. There's actually no, we don't see any threat in Washington, D.C. that requires that. But I have an idea. I have an idea. I think you should propose this to Mrs. Pelosi, to the speaker. Say, you know what? I know you care so much. You have such a humanitarian heart. I saw your house in San Francisco. It has probably like 12 bedrooms and a freezer full of amazing ice cream. Why don't you sponsor some of these families and just let them live at your house? Because, I mean, she's asking us to just open our doors, open our nation, let everybody in who wants to come in. Well, I figure with all of her, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to say she's rich. I don't know what's inside her bank account. It just appears that she has the assets to take care of some families. She should actually sponsor some families since she's so open to it. I think this could be a resolution to finding space for them. So instead of the government building all of these facilities, the left and the liberals, there's so many of them, they should be opening up their houses to these folks and letting them find a place to live.
Well, I think that's a great suggestion. She's also taken very, very good care of San Francisco and her right. district of New York City with the last COVID $2 trillion COVID relief package, which actually only had 9% of it as COVID relief. The rest of it was just boondoggles, like paying off her Pelosi colleagues and you know, the cronies. That's what it is.
Right. The cronies. It was like when I went down to Tennessee and interviewed, farmers, and they were told that they weren't going to get 120% of their loan paid off because they were white. So it was just like, you know, only if you're a minority. That was also in. So it seems like everything they've done is to just divide the nation. And that's so unfortunate, because we're a nation of so many people. From so many places, but we also have rules of law, right? A rule
right.
of law. And that's why you're heading down to the border. I'm going to give you the final word. I know you have a flight you need to catch, and I don't want to keep you, but I want to leave this moment open to you. What do you hope comes from your trip, and what are you hoping to resolve as far as this crisis for the American people? Because I know you care.
Absolutely. I've got 17 grandchildren, and I'm very, very worried about their future. And so first off, let me just say, great to be with you, Sarah. You've come and spoken to our Conservative Opportunity Society on an occasion. I've seen you there, and we actually have a connection through my son and daughter-in-law.
Right.
And I just want to say that what we're trying to do and hoping to do is to cut through this unofficial gag order, to get the information about exactly what's happening, the disaster unfolding in front of our eyes, but yet we have so little of the mainstream media that is helping us get the word out that it's just very difficult. And so if we could persuade people to start really hammering on their elected officials, it's already happening. We've got two Democrat Congress members from Texas mm-hmm. that are actually already criticizing the Biden administration for some of these foolhardy policies. But if we could get the Biden, my hope is that the Biden administration will realize they are making an absolutely terrible mistake, and it's going to cost them dearly at the polls in 2 years and 22. And I think the American people know that they are not, that they absolutely do not want these hard left policies that are opening us up to criminality, terrorism. They arrested four people on the terrorist watch list just shortly
right.
ago. And
right.
people don't want that. It makes them scared. It makes them nervous. And the humanity of it, the humane thing to do, I'm trying to say, is mm-hmm. get control of the border, because people are suffering, dying, and having terrible things at the hands of the cartels. And we've got to change that.
From your mouth to God's ears, because absolutely, that is exactly what is going on. I thank you so much, Congressman, for being a truth teller. I thank you for coming on the show, and I would love to have you back. And who knows, maybe I'll run into you when I'm in Texas. I would really like that.
That's where I'm going right now.
Oh, lucky you. I love that. I call that, between Texas and Florida, I call that, those are our two free states.
You bet.
Free states. I mean, you can't ask for more. And hospitality, just the most lovely people in the country. I tell you, there is a good spirit in Texas because you get there and you just never want to leave. I'm just like, I just want to stay. The food's great. The people are great. It's just a phenomenal place.
Thank you for saying that. God bless Texas. But I'll tell you, Florida is a great state. I'm very, very proud of that governor down there, Ron DeSantis, who's a friend.
Oh, he's amazing. What do you think about his future? Like, I mean, a lot of people are saying he could be a president. A lot of people are saying that. Are you hearing that rumor?
Like, certainly hearing the name. I really am. And I tell you, we're in such dire need of leadership today. Like I've never seen in my life. So stay in prayer and keep getting the word out, Sarah. Thank you for what you do.
Voy a ponerme la vacuna Prevnar 20 porque estoy en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica,
la cual pudiera llevarme al hospital. Así que preguntaré sobre Prevnar 20.
65 años o más, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20. Vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente. Una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la vacuna que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20. Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes, y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
So Congressman Babin is going to be out there. I hope I get an opportunity to see him out on the border. I was so grateful to have him on the podcast, and I'm definitely going to have him come back. And I know you are too, but I would be remiss if we didn't go directly to Senator Rand Paul. As I talked about earlier in this podcast, I think Rand Paul is so amazing how he slammed Fauci, Dr. Fauci, and really hit him with some hard questions as Dr. Fauci once again just sits there straight-faced and gaslights us. Listen to this. And this is
telling everybody to wear a mask, whether they've had an infection or a vaccine. What I'm saying is they have immunity, and everybody agrees they have immunity. What studies do you have that people that have had the vaccine or have had the infection are spreading the infection? If we're not spreading the infection, isn't it just theater?
No, it's not.
You had the vaccine and you're wearing two masks. Isn't that theater?
No, that's not. Here we go again with the theater. Let's get down to the facts.
Here we go again with the theater.
The other thing is that when you talk about reinfection and you don't keep in the concept of variants, that's an entirely different ballgame. That's a good reason for a mask. In the South African study conducted by J&J, they found that people who were infected with wild type
and
were exposed to the variant in South Africa, the 351, it was as if they had never been infected before. They had no protection.
Hey, you want to get rid of vaccine hesitancy? Tell them they can quit wearing their mask after they get the vaccine. Okay. You want people to get the vaccine? Give them a reward instead of telling them that the nanny state's going to be there for 3 more years and you got to wear a mask forever. People don't want to hear it. There's no science behind it.
Well, let me just state for the record that masks are not theater. Masks are protective. And we
have immunity there, theater. If you already have immunity, you're wearing a mask to give comfort to others. You're not wearing a mask because of any science.
I totally disagree with you.
Okay, that's just such BS. Because remember, Fauci was the one that was telling us in the beginning not to wear a mask, that it didn't do It basically didn't do anything for you. Like, it would be worse. Remember that? And then he said, oh, I was kind of lying about that because I was worried about the N95s being all taken up. It's such BS. You guys, I was at the airport. I couldn't even believe it. You know, for those of you that are watching this on YouTube or a Rumble, this, my daughter got me this mask. It's kind of thick and it's sparkly. It was fun. I threw it on when I went onto the airplane. And a guy with a paper mask, he had a little paper mask right around, like barely even covering his face, like sat there and was like telling me, is that mask thick enough? Is it, what's going on with your mask? And I'm like, yeah, it's thick enough. You can see this. It's thick. I can barely talk. I can barely breathe in my mask. And he's like, yeah, I don't know if it's thick enough. I'm like, you're literally wearing a paper mask, like a piece of paper. Like, I might as well have lined paper across my face with a rubber band around my ears, and I will even have more protection than you. And he's like, well, if anyone says anything about your mask, just wear another one underneath. No, I refuse to double mask it. I don't believe this. I don't know what's going on here, but we need to ask some questions, some serious questions, because Dr. Fauci is an immunologist and we've showed you his inconsistencies in the past. And now he wants us to a triple wear, double, quadruple masks. And he's talking about variants in South Africa. And of course, viruses evolve. But remember this. A lot of times, talk to any immunologist or epidemiologist I have. A virus evolves is usually trying to keep its host alive. Viruses don't necessarily always want to kill the host, although it happens. Ebola is one of them. We saw that with HIV and AIDS, and we've seen it with others. But viruses want to be able to live as long as they can. That's why they're a virus. That's why they're searching for a right host, which is really creepy and scary. But they don't want you to necessarily die, because then they will die. They want to survive. So usually when there's variants of a virus, usually, not always, and I'm not a doctor, but this is what doctors have told me, when it evolves, it likes to evolve into a form that is less lethal to keep its host alive. That's just what I've been hearing. Anyways, we've got to ask the questions, and I'm wearing my mask, right? I'm doing everything I can because I don't want to get thrown off a plane or anything like that. But there's these people that think that they can do whatever they want. They have power over you. This new mask mandate gives people who didn't have power over you, right? And they don't mind wielding that mask power. And I think Dr. Fauci is one of them. I want you to hear this clip too, because this is so insane. President Harris, could that have been a Freudian slip? Listen.
President Harris and I took a virtual tour of a vaccination center in Arizona.
President Harris and I. What the heck, guys? Questions. If anything, this podcast has been about not being afraid to ask the right questions. Our president, President Biden, yes, he is the president of the United States, even if you didn't vote for him, he is the president. President Biden just called his vice president, President Harris. And we have actually seen him totally just lost on stage, lost in interviews, I bet she's walking around the White House, can't even find the Oval Office. Maybe he ended up in a bathroom. Maybe he ended up someplace else. I don't know. But shouldn't we be asking these questions? This is the president of the United States of America. Remember when the left-wing media had all of these psychologists and sociologists and people on CNN and MSNBC consistently trying to examine and deconstruct President Trump? Remember that? Oh, he's a narcissist. Oh, he's this. Oh, there's something wrong with him. Oh, he slipped up on a word. It was like every single day. And now we're not hearing that. Now we're not even seeing that, right? They're not even asking a question. Yes, we need to be asking questions. And by the way, if any reporter in that White House had some common sense, they would ask it to Jen Psaki right away. Hey, Jen, is there a crisis in the White House? Because there is something going on with President Biden. Why did he call her? Why did he call Kamala Harris, his vice president, president? What's going on here? Remember, folks, never be afraid to ask a question. Never be afraid to speak the truth. That's the only way we're going to resolve a crisis. That's the only way we're going to make a difference. I thank you so much for being a part of the Sarah Carter Show. Remember, your you and me. It's us together. We're out there together. I'm like you, just trying to tell the story. You are the story. You and everyone in this country, we are the American people, and we're just trying to get along. We're trying to figure out what's going on here. And the only way we can do that is being able to communicate with one another. That's why I said, go to sarahcarter.com, sign up for my email. Don't forget to do that. Sign up for all the social media. Remember, Parler is back. Please join Parler. Follow me on Parler at Sarah Carter Official. And remember, right here at the Sarah Carter Show, we are taking the story back.
Hi, it's Dana Loesch, host of The Dana Show. Every day, I'm here to keep you up to speed on the most important stories and info that you need to know in your very busy life. And if you're always on the go and you want to stay connected, just download our daily podcast and take it with you. It's a great way to get up to speed on what you need to know and what legacy media may not be telling you. Visit danaradio.com and click on the podcast link or subscribe at iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.